We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. I appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate you being here. Today, I have a very special guest for all you guys, the incomparable Matt Barrows, who does an outstanding job covering the 49ers for The Athletic. He's been doing it for right around 20 years. Matt, thanks for coming on. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Yeah. 20 plus years now. It's the first draft that I covered, I want to say they drafted Quame Harris. That's how long I've been covering the 49ers. So
I'm sure, yeah, 20 I'm plus sure years. A lot of our listeners just kind of like stared off into space. I know that I did a little bit. That was before my 49ers fandom grew to a fruition. You know, when one of my first 49ers memories was the 49ers playing, I want to say the Eagles, in Candlestick Park, and the wind and the rain was so bad that the Eagles kicker could not figure out how to kick the field goal and have it go through the uprights. The wind would just send it right back. I have no idea how long ago that was.
I covered a game in Chicago that was so windy that, I mean, extra points would set off towards the uprights and then just take a hard left. like it hit an imaginary wall. That was the one where Nathan Vasher took back a Joe Nedney field goal attempt for 100 plus yards. The windiest game I've ever witnessed.
Did it just become like we must do 2-point conversions, or were people still attempting the field goals?
Well, Joe Nedney was convincing Mike Nolan, the coach, that he could do it. And, Nedney's, big guy. I mean, he's like the size of a defensive end. This was just a abnormal, even for Chicago standards, it was an abnormally strong wind. We're talking like 45, 50 mile an hour gusts. There's a reason they don't call it the breezy city in Chicago.
Right. I mean,
it was windy.
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but yeah, that's just one of my earliest football memories. I can't even remember when it was. I'd have to ask my dad. We were sitting, it was one of those things where we had bought, I'm not even sure that's a word. We had bad seats, but you know, Candlestick Park, it had that curve at the top that came up and over a couple rows. And it wasn't long before people that had much better seats than us were coming back to our seats in hopes of sitting underneath the coverage up there. It's a good memory. I actually haven't thought about that for a long time. It just, you brought it out of me. Have you taken any totally random Matt and I inside joke that I'll have to clue everybody into? Have you, taken any trips to Mercy Springs lately?
You know, I've been thinking about it. Thinking about a trip down there. It's, as you know, it's a haul. But I like to go down there every now and then just because it's so different. It's like you're in an entirely different state. We're talking about really, what is it, Western Fresno County, like the very last bit of Fresno County before it gets into San Bernardino County.
It's so for those of you listening that have no idea what we're talking about, when I make my commute from Fresno to Santa Clara, I go through Kerman, through Mendota, and I'm kind of driving through the middle of the Central California countryside until you hit the I-5. And if I were to not go onto the I-5 and go over it, I immediately find myself on, I think, a part of Mercy Springs Road, and it's how you get to Mercy, like Hot Springs. And and every time I see that sign, I'm like, this is the beginning of a scary movie. This is where it starts right here. And of all people, Matt Barrows actually knows Mercy. I don't know how it came up, but you've actually been there. And I think you mentioned there's like a time when owls are there or something.
Well, so people stay there overnight. And I am not bold enough to do that. I'm with you with the vibe. I mean, we're talking, it's Breaking Bad vibes when you're going around there. But yeah, it's a known roost for something called a long-eared owl, which is not a very rare, but rarely seen. But they will tend to all roost in the same trees. So if you go in like late winter and you look up at the base of this pine tree, nothing appears there at first glance. But if you kind of focus in, all of a sudden you see, 20, 30 owls up there. they're all staring down at you. And this is just, I mean, I guess it's the springs are what attract the owls. There's probably a lot of rodents around there. But I think that they've been going to this spot for, eons. So it's part of their kind of, their routine as a species.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know how this has evolved into a typical continent. I mean, at least when I was still coming around is more often, but if you Google Mercy Hot Springs, it will not be a place you want to visit. You will see like weird bathtubs outside and wooden sheds. And it looks exactly what it sounds like. But of all, like I said, Matt Barrows' knowledge is vast. And for you to know about that place and what happens there always just completely blew my mind.
I don't know what happens. quote unquote, what happens at Mercy Hot Springs. But I have a suspicion.
Right. I'm sure it stays there as the saying goes. Okay, I suppose we should talk 49ers things, but don't worry, I do it all the time. I'm a pro at going off subject, but obviously the latest and greatest that everybody is talking about, and maybe they should or shouldn't be, but Brandon Ayuk, he checked off the next box of his contract extension checklist, and that was unfollowing the 49ers on social media. There was somebody's attempt to conjure up a trade request that was immediately shut down by the agent. I mean, how are you enjoying that whole theater, or is this just kind of the way contract extensions go these days?
Yeah, I've learned never to report on contract extensions because they go on and on and on. They usually don't get done until the very, very last minute, which is, what happened with Deebo Samuel and even longer for Nick Bosa. So covering them in March and April, I mean, it's just painful. and I get why Brandon Ayuk is hot and bothered and why he's trying to kind of gin up this discontent with the hope that it results in a big contract extension. This is huge. I mean, this is, you're set for life. Your children are set for life. This is a multi-generational contract that we're talking about. So there's a lot at stake. But for the rest of us, I mean, I just, and this is a generational thing, but I can't get hot and bothered about somebody unfollowing somebody else on social media. I know that, for a certain generation, that's like the worst thing and it's a real insult. I mean, I just roll my eyes. What a passive aggressive, horrible little thing that's come about in the last, 5 years. Oh, he unfollowed them. Oh my goodness. Wow. So I'm just waiting for this to be over. I think it's going to end up like the Deebo Samuel situation did. I think that the first mini camps and OTAs, and we're talking May, will be telltale, because Deebo Samuel, you know, went through this, and it was probably even more divisive. I mean, he actually asked for a trade, and there was more kind of social media rancor. But then by the time that the OTAs came around, he wasn't participating, but he was there. And that was a signal that, okay, this is going to get done. Everything's going to be fine. It might take a little while longer, but this is on its way to being done. So to me, that's what I'm kind of looking for in the next month or so.
Now, where does the, in your opinion, where's the fifth-year option play into this? Because the more I've talked about it, I suppose it gives teams a little bit more of a little bit more leverage in terms of contracts. Obviously, it puts them on the books for another year, but it seems like it rarely gets used. Like, it's there, but nobody really wants to play on it. And if a player has any inkling that they are valuable enough to be paid by that team or any other team, that it just seems like it's almost like a formality at this point. What's your take on that? Because it just doesn't even seem like an option that Brandon Ayuk is going to play on it. I'm sure the 49ers could really try to force their hand in doing that, but is it even a reality at this point?
I mean, I think it is. I mean, he's under contract for another season. There are a few players who play on it. Brian Burns, maybe. That's the only one that leaps to mind. And he's been notoriously unhappy in recent years because of the lack of a long-term deal. The fact of the matter is that if, you know, he can't hold out or else he's going to get fined because he is under contract. So that's the leverage that, you know, that fifth year option being under contract is that if you miss these things like the mandatory mini camp in early June or training camp, which is going to start up, you know, late July this year, you get fined and the fines start to add up over a while. So that's where the leverage comes in. I don't know if it really matters as far as what the magic number is. You know, to that end, it's more about what the most recent wide receiver contracts are. And we saw one get done today, you know, $25 million. That's sort of the starting point, I think, for discussions.
Yeah, I was looking at Devonta Smith's numbers compared to Brandon Ayuk's numbers, and they're strikingly similar. And not that they necessarily are in the same offense. Devonta Smith has a few more targets. Brandon Ayuk has, you know, more yards per catch. Obviously, Brandon Ayuk's numbers this season were pretty unbelievable for a guy that is as targeted as little as he is. I mean, I guess you've kind of already mentioned it, but do you see? I mean, is that what Brandon Ayuk's looking for? I think he's probably going to want a little bit more than $51 million guaranteed. I think Deebo was right around $50 million. So I think that since that contract's been done, obviously everything's gone up. So he'll want more than that. I'd always assumed that he wanted right around $25 million a year. Is that kind of, I guess the better way to phrase this question is, do the 49ers need to be in a hurry to beat these other wide receiver contracts that are coming down the line? You've got CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like there is a reason for them to have a little bit of pep in their step. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. It's a good reason to get it done early because they're only going to go up and up and up. The year that Deebo did his though, a couple of others got done that same year. And I don't know whether it affected the bottom line. I was always struck that Deebo Samuel's extension was for 3 years. And I thought that was, you know, less than what some of these other guys got. And less, you know, you usually see an extension at 4 or 5 years. And Samuel, frankly, was coming off a better season, certainly better numbers, 2 years ago than Brandon Ayuk is coming off of now. All sorts of reasons for that. He was it. He was the only weapon at that point. There's no Christian McCaffrey back then. Ayuk wasn't Ayuk. Kittle was injured. So they really had to lean on Deebo Samuel. But my point is that he delivered. I mean, he was everything. He's the reason they got all the way to the NFC Championship game that year. So that always surprised me. I mean, it sort of revealed that the 49ers do have some misgivings, but some questions about him. I don't think that they had those same concerns about Brandon Ayuk. And I think that the Ayuk Brock Purdy connection is something that they really cherish. I know Brock Purdy does. And they just see that as such a good chemistry moving forward. Obviously, if things go the way that they hope, Brock Purdy's going to have a huge deal coming up. He's going to be signed for, you know, the foreseeable future. You want to have guys that make him look good. And we already know that about Brandon Ayuk. It's a strong connection. So I think that that is going to go a long way toward this this Ayuk contract extension when it finally gets done.
And I mean, I'm kind of with you in the fact that it seems almost, to me at least, a guarantee that it will get done. He just turned 26. He's entering into basically an entire contract's worth of his prime. And there's, I've always thought of Brandon, I kind of pat myself on the back. Ever since maybe his sophomore year, I've said, look, Brandon Ayuk is a very good receiver. He's just never going to get the volume that he would get like a Justin Jefferson. And, you know, and this last season was kind of the first season where you saw, okay, he is capable of huge numbers if he's in the right situation. And I'm assuming if they get this new deal done, that it'll obviously be off the, it won't be in writing, but I'm assuming his targets will go up a little bit. But with this whole situation, everybody's kind of working their way one way or another. But I always just came back to the fact that I don't think there's another team in the NFL that Brandon Ayuk is more valuable to than the 49ers. He does everything they could possibly want. I don't see how your first move after you realize you've gotten a franchise quarterback, it's getting safer to say that, would be to deal away his far and away his most favorite target.
I agree with you. And adding to that is just the sheer amount of work it takes to get a receiver ready to play in this offense. I mean, we've seen so many receivers just fail at it. Dante Pettis, Danny Gray is having trouble doing it. Jalen Hurd, he never really got started. But obviously, Kyle Shanahan has very high expectations, high standards for his wide receivers. And it took, I mean, Brandon Ayuk wasn't an overnight sensation. I mean, there were some growing pains in there. So why, after you finally got him to the point where it's just perfect, it's everything that you want in a receiver. He can run all the routes. He can line up at every position. He's, you know, Kyle Shanahan really wants these guys who are so super smooth in and out of their breaks. I mean, the whole thing about the Kyle Shanahan offense is you can run, you know, myriad different plays from the same looks. A guy like Ayuk allows you to do that because he's such a refined, talented route runner. You don't, after all that work, you don't trade him to another team. And frankly, I don't think another team, you know, wants to give the 49ers what they're asking for Ayuk. I mean, this is a good draft for wide receivers. You draft a wide receiver in the first round, and you're paying him dirt cheap for the first 4 or 5 years. So, you know, all signs point to maybe a couple of phone calls, just like a couple of years ago during the draft when Deebo Samuel was available for the right price. But I don't think that the 49ers get anywhere close to the right price. And, you know, he ends up being a 49er once the draft is all said and done.
Yeah, that's always just seemed like the most likely outcome. I mean, Kyle Shanahan has to see Brandon Ayuk as like the clay that he molded, right? You know, and I think you mentioned this in your, which is what we'll have to talk about. This will be a good segue, and I'm usually horrible at those, but your AD Mitchell piece talked about how much Brandon Ayuk has evolved since he got to the 49ers. You know, he wasn't known for just being his blocking prowess and stuff, but he, through trials and tribulations, kind of just absorbed everything Kyle Shanahan wanted him to be. And obviously that's a huge onus on himself, but why don't we transition to your draft crush and get into the draft stuff. You do a draft crush every year. You're perfectly transparent on how successful those crushes have or haven't panned out, which makes it all that much better. Thankfully, you don't take yourself too seriously. But why don't you tell us about AD Mitchell and what he would give to the 49ers?
Well, first of all, Rob, nobody bats 1,000 at these things. So
not even the guys that are getting paid a lot of money.
For my Lattimore crush.
you hammered yourself. It was true comedy.
Well, thank you. Well, Adonai Mitchell, to me, Adonai Mitchell is the best player that is a possibility, a realistic possibility at 31. And, you know, all the feedback I've been getting from the naysayers on Twitter is that he's not going to get to 31, that the Bills are going to scarf him up at pick 28. That very well may happen. But I think that there is a good possibility or a fair possibility that he gets there. And, I think I just described what Kyle Shanahan looks for in a receiver. You know, the reason why he traded up for both Pettis and for Brandon Ayuk is just that those movement skills. And I think that Mitchell has very similar movement skills and really kind of puts defensive backs in a bind right away, sort of knows how to manipulate them. Probably can get more consistent with his routes, but has the talent to mold. I think that that's the point. And so when you're looking ahead at the 49ers wide receiver position, I think you have that trio of Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Juwan Jennings again for this year. But after that, I don't think that they're going to have all three of those guys next year. Two of them, Ayuk and Jennings, are scheduled to be unrestricted free agents. We've been talking, I think that Ayuk is going to have a long-term deal, and maybe Juwan Jennings does too. Deebo Samuel, though, has, I call it an escape hatch in his contract that allows the 49ers to get out of it in a fairly harmless way. So that's a possibility moving forward, that he's not on the team next year, and in which case, okay, well, who's your number 2/number 3 wide receiver? I don't think that guy's on the roster right now. So that's why, to me, that would make sense were that the pick there. Adonai Mitchell, 4.34 40 speed, which is insane. I don't think he kind of moves that fast on the field, but he's got the ability to. I mean, there's some very kind of special qualities about him, which is why if he did last to the very end of the first round, it's almost a no-brainer that you take him.
We'll be right back with Matt Barrows. Needed to take a quick minute to talk to you guys about Prize Picks. As you guys know, Prize Picks is rolling with Striking Gold for the 2024 NFL season. It is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just you against the numbers. You're picking more, you're picking less, 2-6 player stat projections, and you're watching the winnings roll in. Okay, you guys have heard me talk about it. I love the simplicity of Prize Picks. It's intuitive. You jump on their website, you find the team you're looking for, you find the players you're looking for, and then you're punching in an entry in less than a minute. It's very simple, very easy. There, a couple times this season, there were points where the players were already on the field for the opening kickoff. I realized I hadn't punched in my entry. I was on there. I had it locked in before the kick was done. So I highly recommend Prize Picks. It's been a whole new element of my NFL season, and it doesn't have to be football. They've got baseball, they've got basketball, and they've got hockey, many other sports, even into professional gaming. So they've got all of them covered. What you're going to do is you're going to go to prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD, and you're going to get a first deposit match of up to $100. Okay. prizepicks.com/gold. And you're going to use the promo code GOLD. That's going to tell them that you came from the Striking Gold podcast, and they're going to match your first deposit up to $100. Prize Picks, that's daily fantasy sports made easy. Well, and even if the 49ers were convinced that the Bills were going to draft him, it would be the same as they did for Brandon Ayuk. You go up 3 or 4 spots and you jump a team that you think is right there. I can't remember. I want to say 49ers jumped Green Bay and everybody thought they were going to take a receiver. I'm not sure on that, but it's if you really think that he's going to go to the Bills, it's not hard to jump up, and teams would be willing to make that move because they're trading back and they're still in the first round. They're still getting first year, you know, the fifth year option and stuff. But one of the things I noticed with Mitchell was I guess if you were only paying attention to the TV angle when the play happens, you would think that teams were doing a pretty poor job covering him, because he gets wide open against man coverage. And, you know, it was, I was very surprised at how much space he consistently had between the DB and himself. And when he didn't have that space, he's a pretty acrobatic guy. So it's, I mean, receivers far and away my favorite position, played it in, all the way through high school. And it's, I'm very much an AD Mitchell fan right there with you. And I, to your point, I don't think it's that crazy. Everybody's been talking about offensive line. We'll get to that. But to me, there are so many positions with the 49ers that are 1 year away from being a drastic need. You know, like, you maybe, I think I wrote them down, at least half a dozen positions that are 1 year away from being a big problem. So I guess to get us deeper into the draft stuff, let me see if I can phrase this question right. Do you think the 49ers are just tired of getting so close to winning the Super Bowl that would they steer away from a possible offensive lineman that may not get snaps this year just to pick a player that's going to be on the field this year and give them a slightly better chance to win? Or do you think that I could just see them being so sour on getting, on being so close again, that they would only be interested in a player that's going to help them win right now? Or do you still think they still have kind of an eye towards the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, that they are looking to kind of fill holes that will appear next year and the year after. So, I mean, offensive line would make total sense in that regard. I can't figure out what their MO is with the offensive line this year, because the guys that have been talked about for months and months and months as surefire first rounders, the 49ers haven't done much work on those guys. Like, I'll just give you one example. Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. He seems like he's, you know, a possible future left tackle. Maybe not as a rookie, but he's got all the tools to be. They've done very little work on him. And I just think that for somebody who only has 8 starts at Oklahoma, and if you're thinking about taking him in the first round, you would do a lot of work, a lot of research. You'd bring him in, you'd work him out. I don't know if they've done any of that stuff. They had a formal interview with Jordan Morgan, the Arizona offensive tackle. And I think those are the two tackles who are most likely to be there at the end of the first round. But that's it. He doesn't have a formal visit with them. And remember, the coaching staff no longer goes out to the combine. So that means that Chris Foerster never met with Jordan Morgan, or at least never met with him in person. So I don't know. You know, they're so picky when it comes to offensive linemen. I mean, Foerster will look at some of these guys, and this is a league-wide thing, because the college game isn't really preparing these offensive tackles for the pro game. So it may be that the 49ers realize that anybody they pick is just going to require so much work that why don't we just use a day two, or maybe even an early day three pick at that position, put the time in with the guy, and then in a couple of years, he'll be ready. I don't know the answer to that, but they don't seem to be going gangbusters after any of these offensive linemen. Now, having said that, we just saw I question whether John Lynch and Chris Foerster were pleased with this, but there was the Washington University social media team had a picture of both of those guys in their Washington gear checking out prospects. What was it, yesterday or the day before? Over the weekend. And Washington has a ton of prospects, especially along the offensive line and at receivers. So that may be a hint as to who they're thinking about.
You know, it's funny about that too, is it happened all right around at the same time that Mel Kiper had that ESPN's Mel Kiper had that interview where he, you know, he was opened up for questions on his mock draft, and he had Washington offensive tackle Roger Rosengarten going to the 49ers, which was at 31, which was quite a bit earlier than everybody had him. And his whole justification was, look, I'm just going off what I'm hearing. And then not a day or two later, you see a picture of John Lynch and Chris Forster just standing there with their Washington gear, watching the workout. And I mean, they had to have known that Washington was going to take a picture of them in all of that Washington gear, right? Or were they, did they truly think that wearing the Washington gear gave them, like, you know, a disguise against the pictures? I mean, John Lynch is a very recognizable guy.
I was reminded of the kind of secret mission that Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman went on to scout Peyton Manning back when he was coming, and they wore hoodies and they went to Duke and they tried to do it, you know, at night at the stadium and stuff like that. And they definitely kept in the shadows the whole time. This was more open. These guys put on the gear, but you're right. Does putting on the gear mean that they were just kind of trying to blend in? John Lynch has a pretty recognizable face. So that would have been a bad move, I think, if that's what they were trying to do. I gotta assume that there were other teams there, and that, you know, that's the whole thing about these teams doing their utmost to keep things under wraps. Everybody is talking. The agents are telling teams who you know worked out for whom. All this stuff is known by the time that the draft rolls around. So very, very few secrets to be had. But to your point about Rosengarten, he's interesting. Because he does kind of check a lot of the boxes that the 49ers would want from an offensive tackle. I mean, he's sort of described as a guy that would really do well in a zone blocking type of offense, which of course is what the 49ers run. He's not, you know, he's got shortish arms. He's got the smallest wingspan of any of the top tackles, say day one and two tackles. So if you're thinking about taking him at 31, gee, there are some things that suggest that, okay, maybe he's not perfect for a first rounder. 31 though is in that sort of nebulous area. I mean, yeah, it's technically a first round pick, but, you know, you're starting to get into second round talent there. So if the 49ers conclude, you know, something akin to what I just said that, okay, we'll take an offensive lineman. Any offensive lineman we take, it's going to require some time in the weight room, some time practicing, some time kind of listening to Trent Williams. This guy's as good as any. Why don't we just take him at 31? This is an apprentice year. He's got that fifth year as well. Let's just develop him in year one, and then maybe in year two, he's ready to compete for a starting spot.
Well, I also heard, I can't quote it perfectly, but I heard that he was training with Joe Staley, was one of his one of the guys leading him in some of his training leading up to the draft. Something about Ed McCaffrey, the McCaffrey's dad. Like, there's already some weird. Have you heard those connections?
Yeah, he played Ed coached Valor High School in Colorado, which is where all of his sons played. And so Rosengarten was on one of those teams, or on multiple of those teams. So I think he played with Luke and not Max, Luke and Dylan.
Okay.
The two younger brothers of the four. And then the other connection, Joe Staley. Yeah, Joe Staley trains, you know, does the kind of pre-draft training for certain offensive linemen every winter. You know, offensive linemen who are affiliated with a certain agency. So he works for the agency and it sort of gets them ready. And yeah, Staley's been working with Rosengarten. So the 49ers are going to have a really good sort of terrific intel on who this guy is. Now, Staley's been doing that for a few years now. They have yet to take one of his guys. So I think he's kind of giving them a really honest you know, perspective every time. It's not just because I'm training him, you guys should take him. So I don't know what Staley would tell him. I mean, I think when you watch him, and I was trying to kind of watch as much film as available on YouTube as there is, he's really technically sound and, you know, doesn't give up a lot of sacks. He's not dominant, though. And, you know, he gets knocked back quite a bit. knocked to the ground a few times, at least in the games that I was watching. So again, I just don't know what the 49ers kind of take on him and what amount of work he would require is. And that's sort of the big question.
Well, and to your point, you're not really going to get a dominant, at least you don't expect to get a dominant player at 31. Has there been dominant players there? Of course. There's been dominant players going all the, you know, every pick of the draft. But at 31, like you said earlier, I would wager that most, if not all, teams do not have 32 players with a first round grade. I think a lot of times fans get kind of the two picking in the first round and first round grades kind of mixed up. I think that a lot of teams are going to be taking, especially late in the first round, what they feel is kind of day two talent. And at that point, you're either going off just best player available or throwing in a little bit of need. I've always kind of smirked at the idea that everybody always pounds the table for best player available. But when you watch players or teams draft, it's rarely the case. They're almost always taking a player that fits into their needs somewhere. So I don't, and it seems like you'd have to tell me if you feel the same, but it seems like the 49ers don't necessarily care where players are graded, or at the very least, they're very convicted when it comes to their grading. And I don't think that the 49ers would really care much if they gave Rosengarten a late first round grade and or an early second round grade, and everybody else had him as like an early third rounder. You know, I don't think that bugs them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they draft based on how do we see this guy fitting in? Right. And so, you know, talent obviously is part of that. But, you know, they're not going to take a player at a position that, you know, there's no way that this guy is going to be able to get on the field. You know, they're not going to take a quarterback, for example. They're not going to take a kicker. You know, they have those positions covered. So they would have a plan for a Roger Rosengarten. And, you know, and you and I think kind of spelled out that plan perfectly. You don't know how long Trent Williams is going to play. I mean, he's discussed retirement. He said in the past he wants to play till he's 40, but, you know, it could be that at the end of the season he hangs him up. So Rosengarten played right tackle at Washington, but he has left tackle skills. I think he started at right tackle because the quarterback is a lefty, so he's protecting the blind side. Point being that, you know, he's the type of guy that you would want. Someone who's got versatility. Let's just say Trent Williams decides to play again in 2025. Well, hooray. Now you've got Rosengarten able to compete with McKivitz at right tackle. And worst case scenario, he's the swing tackle for a second straight season. So that would be, I mean, to me that, you know, if they're convinced that, you know, he's got that ability, that would be enough to draft him at 31. That would be good rationale for drafting him at that spot.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would be, they may be, you know, the old rumblings about, well, that might be a little early, but I don't think anybody would be confused as to why the pick happened. But just to cap off our own line talk here, you just mentioned it. Trent Williams is nearing retirement. Aaron Banks, left guard, is on the last year of his contract. Jake Brendel's cheap, but they could obviously upgrade there if they wanted to. John Feliciano, they'd probably consider him surprisingly solid last season, but he's on a one-year deal. And Colt McKivitz is kind of the same as Jake Brendel. He's cheap, but they could probably get better. Are you ruling out any pick on the offensive line? I mean, I know everybody is kind of focused on tackle because that's the premium position, but it wouldn't surprise me if they went anywhere.
Yeah, and you know, there could be some guys there. I mean, everybody has some of these centers and guards going in the teens and 20s. Those guys, though, traditionally aren't picked until later. And 31 would be a great spot for a Graham Barton or the center slash guard from Oregon. So yeah, I think that you know, any of those O-line positions are a possibility. I still have yet to see, though, a single guy, really, and maybe Marshawn Nealand, the defensive lineman from, is it Western Michigan? I think it's Western Michigan.
Yep.
Is the exception. But, you know, usually the 49ers host on visits just about everybody that they end up drafting. And especially the first rounders. I think the only first rounder they've taken since Kyle Shanahan got the head coaching gig, who hasn't come through on a 30 visit, was Mike McGlinchey. And everybody was just so blown away with him and his character during his combine interview that they were convicted at that point, and they didn't really want to kind of provide any more clues from that point forward about what they were thinking. But that was back when Shanahan actually went to the combine and the coaches actually went to the combine. They didn't go to the combine this year. So to me, that means that, you know, if you're thinking about a guy at pick 31, you're probably going to bring him out. And I know we only have a partial list so far. Most of those visits are happening. I don't know when your podcast is running, but Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. So basically a week away from the draft. And I just don't know. I don't know any of those guys that have come out so far. And we'll probably learn a few more names in the coming days. But it's a bit of a puzzle to me about who they're actually thinking about, who is worthy of pick 31.
Yeah, it's all there. I mean, you mentioned Marshawn Nealand. I mean, there's only a couple guys on their list, on the list of top 30 visits that we've gotten so far, that even get close to that pick. So it's definitely a mystery right now. But what you mentioned earlier, and I was going to do it at some point. I don't know. I guess I'm running out of time to do it. But I actually, over the past 3 years, went through the list and looked at all their top 30 visits from that year and how many of those guys that they drafted, they visited on their top 30. And it's a significant list. It's like 60 to 70% of the players they draft were in on a top 30 visit. So what I planned on doing was doing some sort of mock draft where I'm only allowed to take guys that they visited. And there's some interesting names on here, Marshawn Nealand. And I've seen Ian Rappaport of NFL Network's made a couple tweets over the last week talking about how Marshawn Nealand was being a little undervalued in the outside draft circles, but was a player that teams liked a lot. And I don't think it would shock anybody if the 49ers drafted a defensive end, an edge player, or even a defensive lineman in the first round. Are you ready for yet another defensive lineman to get called in the first round?
Yeah, you can tell that teams like Marshawn Nealand because he's had like 16 visits. So he's like a huge number. The guy's racking up the frequent flyer miles this this spring. It wouldn't surprise me given who the 49ers are. Marshawn Nealand is sort of a rough and tumble defensive end. So he's not like a speed guy. He's not a 245-pound edge rusher. He's very physical. He could be your base down end. And I think the 49ers are eager to find a permanent bookend to Nick Bosa, but you know they just brought in a pretty high profile free agent for that position, a couple of free agents really. And the other thing about Nealand is that you look at his stats; he's never had more than 4.5 sacks a season. And I realize right. It's college football, and he's only playing 10 or 12 games, but again, I mean, if you're, I realize that I'm contradicting what I said earlier, but it seems a little early to take him, especially when you've got that position pretty much filled up for the next couple of years.
Well, and you saying that reminds me of that scene in Moneyball when they're having that scouting meeting in the beginning of the movie, and they're trying to convince Brad Pitt's character, Brandon Bean, that he would be a good hitter if they only gave him like 1,000 more at bats. And he's like, well, if he's a good hitter, then why doesn't he hit good? And they're like, yeah, well, you know, he's a minor leaguer. He's like, oh, so he'll be better when we put him up against big league arms. And they're like, yeah, you give him 1,000 bats, he'll get better. And he goes, you could see him just kind of losing his mind. And I think I've kind of gone through the same thing with draft scouts. It's almost, and I'm no knock on Marshawn Nyland, but to me, if a player, I'm almost out on most of the projection now, like the, you know, he'll get better in the NFL type stuff. It's like, if he's not doing it at the college level against lesser competition, why would we expect him to do it against the absolute best football players on the planet? I don't know. Am I losing myself there? Has the draft season just got to me?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. And it's all about, you know, what the future version of this player could do, when you really should be looking at what the past version of the player did do.
Right.
That's going to be more predictive than anything else. So I totally get it. I mean, I think that these scouts would tell you that, you know, he's doing all this and this right. He's a physical guy. To me, that's the key about that position. So you get these speed guys, and you put them against a Trent Williams, and that's gone. And then what else do you have? So to me, for a defensive end and edge rusher, everything is sort of builds off of your bull rush. If you don't have any power, you've got nothing to kind of build the rest of your structure off of as a pass rusher. So I think that's probably what the allure of Marshawn Nyland is. Now, I think that there are a lot of good defensive linemen similar to him, and they're all coming in. Brandon Dorlus from Oregon,
mm-hmm.
He's sort of an inside outside type of guy. Michael Hall Jr., inside outside type of guy. All these guys sort of fly off the snap. You know, they're a type that has done well in this defense in the past, and I think the 49ers are trying to replicate that. And I think that's smart. I mean, one of the beauties of having a coaching staff that stays together, and John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have been together for a long time, is that you start to kind of really figure out which types of players are going to do well in the system. And I do believe that the 49ers have started to figure that out.
Yeah, you would think an organization like that is at its best when the coaches in the scouting department, like, you would hope that they would just talk constantly, you know, about finding that sweet spot of a player that the scouting department is kind of in love with, and that the coaching staff, you know, that's their prototype, I guess you could say. I was assuming, do the 49ers do that? Do they have a yearly or a monthly or any, have you ever heard of them having a meeting between the coaches and the scouting department?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why the coaches no longer go to the combine. It's because they've gotten so much faith in the scouting staff to kind of bring to them the players that they know will, you know, that they're looking for. So there's really not as much need for the coaches to get involved early on in the process. And they can sort of winnow down the list a bit. So I think that there's tremendous trust between the scouting department and the coaching department, which is what you want. But I'll tell you straight up that isn't always there for sure. Like I said, I think the longer a regime goes on, the more of an understanding you get. I think I've been asked to do some Adam Peters discussion with the folks out in Washington, because he's the new GM there. And I thought that was one of his real strengths, is that he was always trying to build consensus. He wanted buy-in from everybody, coaching staff. He wanted his area scouts to be excited about guys. And I think that he did a really wonderful job. And this is John Lynch too, obviously, of sort of blending coaches, scouts, everybody together, so that, you know, there's buy-in. You want to see your guys succeed, and the best way to do that is to bring in guys that the coaches are going to use. And I think they've done a good job of that.
Yeah, you would think that it's probably pretty difficult. I mean, it's an absolute organization filled with a lot of people with fairly large egos. So anytime that you can get an organization that or groups that are humble enough to consider everybody else's opinion, it seems like it would only lead to more success. But okay, so last thing I guess we'll get into before I get you out of here. I don't want to draw you out too much, but we've talked O-line, we've talked defensive line, we mentioned receivers, we haven't talked much on them. Is there any other positions that you could see the 49ers going for in the first round that would not necessarily surprise people, but definitely not fall into the offensive line that everybody is expecting them to take?
Yeah, I mean, cornerback would be one, and there could be some good ones that are available there. Just when you're kind of looking at the contracts of these guys, Charvarius Ward, Deamon-Or Lenore, there's no nickel. Unless you want Lenore to be your nickel. You're still kind of looking for that third guy, even this season, and much less next year when you're going to have to pay a lot of money to guys. I don't know if they're going to be able to pay Charvarius Ward and Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy and Deamon-Or Lenore. So I think that cornerback is very much a possibility. I like Kool-Aid McKinstry. He could be there at 31. He didn't get my draft crush because I watched Adonai Mitchell just school him in that Texas Alabama game. So I was like, oh gee, I can't pick the cornerback when the receiver is winning all these matchups. There should be a few, and that position, I think, a lot of times is, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So there could be a name that no one's really thinking about as a quote unquote first rounder that the 49ers end up really liking and that they pick there. They're bringing in a lot of cornerbacks. I will say that second, third round types of guys on these official visits. Some names that I'm going to report later in the week that aren't out yet. So that seems to be where they're thinking of going, second, third round, maybe at that position. So that would make total sense. The guy could have a smaller role this year and then compete for a starting role next year.
Well, all right, Matt, I appreciate you. I'm not sure how many 50-minute pods you do these days, but I appreciate you hanging around for a little while to chat with me. It's been a little while. I don't know how quickly word travels, but I had a son who's 3 months old now. So I'm going to try and get out there to training camp and the games as often as I can. But once the little guy showed up, it's a bit harder to justify just jetting out of here. So, but I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome. Yeah. I wouldn't take the boy past, Mercy Hot Springs quite yet. At least allow him to be ambulatory to kind of be able to run before you take him.
Perfect. 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 All right, Matt. Again, hopefully now that I have your cell number, not that I'm going to be using that often, I promise. But I'll have to have you on here soon enough, maybe after the draft, so we can talk about how the 49ers didn't select your draft crush.
Sounds good.
All right. Appreciate you, bud.
All right. Bye.
All right, everybody. That's it for me and Matt Barrows. I appreciate you guys tuning in. I appreciate you listening. Make sure you go support Matt. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Barrows, and you can find all of his work on the Athletic, where he does an outstanding job covering the 49ers. As you heard, he's been at it for over 20 years. So just a wealth of knowledge, very in tune with what the team is thinking, very in tune with what the team's doing. As you heard, he's going to report some names later this week on players the 49ers are interested in. So make sure you go support him. As always, I can't thank you enough for just being here and listening to the pod and supporting it. If you want to leave us a little bit more support, go to whatever app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, what have you. Leave us a 5-star review and leave some words if you'd like to, but you certainly don't have to. In the end, you just being here and listening to the pod is the ultimate form of support, and I appreciate it. Again, thank you to Matt for coming on. I've had quite a few great guests lined up, and I'm lining up some more as I speak. So hopefully you guys are enjoying it. But as always, all good things must come to an end. For another episode, I'm Rob. That was Matt. This is Striking Gold, and we're signing out.